A Bit of Comfort by Venny Venturi, read by Ashi Black. He doesn't always know when the next episode will hit, and strangely, he's beginning not to mind them so much. At first, of course, he was terrified. But the prospect of Snape inhabiting his personal space has become a bit of comfort, and he's really needing a bit of comfort these days. He wonders why he has them, these spells, these episodes. Perhaps someone is slipping him potions. Perhaps someone is cursing him. Perhaps it's Voldemort. Perhaps he's cracking under the strain and his mind is coming unglued. There's only a little pain in his scar, so the last seems the likeliest excuse. He could be anywhere when it hits him, and without his knowledge, without his permission, he slips into daydream and the scenario plays out again. The closeness, too close. The touching, the kissing, the disrobing, the caressing, the thrusting, the sweating, then dizzy, effervescent orgasm, coming. Coming to and realizing he's still in the Great Hall eating lunch. He's still in Transfiguration with the mangled mouse in front of him. He's mounted on his broom at Quidditch practice. Last one, on the ground with his teammates circling above him. Today, he's still in potions, and Merlin isn't that strange to come to with his cock throbbing in his sticky pants and the sense memory of Snape's body collapsed on his own, only to find Snape looming over the front of his desk, saying, "Perhaps you'd like to share with the rest of the class, Mr. Potter, why you're, once again, not paying attention? Detention, this evening. You will work on this potion until you get it right." He's never before been so spectacularly ashamed, even if no one else can smell the humid, yeasty scent of him. If he says, "I can't go to detention," not to Snape, of course, but to Ron and Hermione, they won't understand. Harry won't explain. He just can't. So he bites his tongue and mutters, "I forgot my Transfiguration text," runs up to the dorm, shoves his dirty pants and trousers in the bottom of his trunk, and rejoins his friends before McGonagall can complain he's late. He could tell Snape. He could lie and say, "I'm sorry, Professor, I'm ill. May I repeat the potion another time?" Though he thinks in all reality he might omit the last. He couldn't care less about lengthening his hair. He could skip and say, "It was Voldemort. My scar, Professor, I couldn't..." And for very similitude, he'd crawl into bed under the sympathetic gaze of his friends, draw the curtains, and silently shake himself to pieces, thinking about Snape's smooth palms and rough fingers, Snape's knees, legs, and hips scrubbing against his own until they are both awash in sweat and cum. He could tell Snape the truth. He imagines turning up to detention in the following scenario. "I'm here for my detention, sir." "Get busy, Mr. Potter," Snape would say, and hand Harry a parchment. "The instructions." Harry would set up his ingredients and work on the potion, and maybe Snape would approach him in the middle of it. He would say, "This is adequate. What is your problem in class, Potter? Are your adoring fans that distracting?" Harry wouldn't rise to that. Instead, he would say, "I'm seeing things, sir. Daydreams. I don't know. They may be from Voldemort." Snape would be concerned, of course. He would, wouldn't he? If it were Voldemort? Harry doesn't know, but he decides to play it out in his head that way. So maybe Snape would say, "Have you told the headmaster then?" And when Harry shakes his head no, perhaps Snape will say, "Well, spit it out. What are they about?" Harry would act confused, maybe, and not a little embarrassed. He'd say, "Well, sir, they're about you. About your role in the war, and mine, sort of." And Snape would say, "Go on. Surely there's more to them than that." To which Harry would reply, "Yes? Yes, Professor, there is." He would gulp nervously and look down at his feet. "We're standing around a table with a map. And you get close. Very close, Professor." Harry would bite his lip and risk a glance up at Snape's face. Snape would be staring right back, unsuspecting, unaware of the bomb Harry's about to drop. "And then, sir, you would touch me. Touch you, Potter, Snape would say, and maybe he would frown. Or maybe he would catch on right away. His eyes would narrow, and maybe he would say, "How dare you, Potter? How dare you make such an accusation against me?" Snape would grab Harry by the lapels and attempt to drag him to the top of his cauldron, and instead of abject fear in Harry's eyes and frightened squeaking, Snape would find hot desire and Harry moaning with need. "You see, Professor," Harry would say, and Snape, knowing a spade for a spade, would agree, but not out loud, and the ensuing moments would find them awkwardly kissing and shuffling around the work table so they could join together and do it properly. Or maybe the scenario would work out this way. "I'm here for my detention, sir." "Very well, then. Strip and assume the position." What, Professor?" "Strip, Mr. Potter. Divest yourself of your clothing. Become naked and lean over my desk, cheek to wood. Do you understand?" "Wait. 6 of the best, Mr. Potter. Take them like the man you'll likely never grow old enough to be." "But the only but I want to know about is your bare one, Mr. Potter," Snape would say, sounding perfectly reasonable and quite ignoring Harry's disbelief. "I can't believe you," Harry would say, angrily shrugging his robe to the floor and unbuttoning his school shirt. "I mean, isn't this..." "No, it isn't." "Do hurry, Potter. I have other business to attend to this evening." "More arses to spank? Tut, tut. You can't imagine impertinence wouldn't be taken out on your anything but impert behind, do you?" Snape would say, tilting his head and making a frank appraisal of Harry's nether regions. "Like what you see, then," Harry would say, impossibly hard and filling his lips pout like the women in the magazines Dudley hid between his mattress and springs. "Like it, Potter. I love it," Snape would say. Wait, Snape would never say something like that. And come to think of it, Harry would never knowingly pout. So he revises in his head. His lips would form a thin, hard line, and Snape would say, "It's nothing to me, Potter. Now count." But that's boring. Snape's usually snarkier than that. So maybe Snape would say, in between blows, "Your bottom, smack, Mr. Potter, smack, is nothing more or less, smack, than any other bottom, smack, to which, smack, I've had the duty, smack, to attend, smack. Sir, that was 7 smacks, not 6. One to grow on, Mr. Potter," Snape would say. "But, sir," Harry would say, turning around and leaning seductively against the table, his heavy erection straining to reach his chin. "I already have grown." "So I see, Mr. Potter," Snape would say. "Perhaps I ought to measure just how much." Snape would sit in the visitor chair in front of Harry, lean forward, and pull Harry forward by his cock until he was sitting in Snape's lap, legs wrapping around Snape's waist and the narrow chair back. Snape wouldn't let go. Something doesn't quite ring true in this scenario, thinks Harry, but he can't put his finger on it. Well, since Harry was imagining anyway, what if he hadn't grown? What if he went to detention in his body from 3rd year, just 13 and still scrawny, but still suffering the intoxicating, damp mortification of his daydreams? How would Snape respond then? If Harry says, "They're from Voldemort," would Snape say, "Ridiculous! If you're going to tell tall tales, perhaps you ought to tell them to the headmaster, Potter," and march him straight up to the spiral staircase? Or would Snape take note of the bulge in Harry's school trousers and say, "Well, well, Potter, it looks like the boy who lived is becoming the man who lived." No, perhaps not that. Perhaps Snape would be inclined to spank him then, too? Maybe like a naughty child over the knee? "Come here, Mr. Potter," Snape would say. "What kind of childish notions have infiltrated your brain now?" Harry would slog forward, dragging his feet until he stood to the side of Snape, where a deceptively gentle hand on his back would tip him forward over Snape's lap. Snape would slide a hand under Harry's robes and grab his hip. The other would bunch the robes into the small of Harry's back, then rain down hard and fast on Harry's clothed buttocks. Harry supposes this would make him scream and cry, and Snape would probably like that very much. Perhaps Harry would feel a swelling under the hip tucked into Snape's groin. Perhaps Snape would feel Harry's answering swelling against his thigh. What if, after the spanking was over and Harry was rubbing his arse trying to put out the flames, Snape pulled Harry back down to sit in his lap and place his hand over the tent in Harry's robes? Would Harry feel the hard bar under his flank twitch when his own cock twitches under Snape's skillful fingers? For surely Snape would grip Harry's boy erection hard through his robes and loose trousers, stroking it, giving it a little twist at the end, just the way Harry likes. And it wouldn't take long, not at all. Just a few pulls, and he would be spilling himself, coming in his pants, feeling an answering throb and dampness on his flank. Merlin's drawers! Harry comes to with the sound of transfiguration erupting in laughter, and McGonagall says, Mr. Potter, is something the matter? No, ma'am, he says, though the wet patch is spreading as it soaks through his pants and school trousers. He pulls at the edges of his robes so they don't get sticky, too. Well, do please pay attention and don't interrupt. If it happens again, I shall have to give you detention. Harry would hate that, mostly because he'd have to explain about his detention with Snape. Just now, though, he can't think of it because this daydream is nothing like all the others. This one, he had some control over, which is entirely new. Harry wonders what that means. That he could voluntarily think of Snape in a sexual manner. That he would. Instead of the familiar, uncontrollable daydream he's used to. Harry thinks maybe it's just as well he's got detention with Snape. He really must be going crazy, and something's got to be done about it. For all his experience running headlong into danger, he still feels a thrill of fear at the prospect of asking Snape for help. In the end, he arrives 2 minutes early and breathless, and Snape already has the potion ingredients laid out for him. Hurry, Potter. I have a meeting with the headmaster in half an hour and would prefer not to delay it. So much for telling him anything, thinks Harry, and he would have left it at that if he hadn't sunk headlong into the familiar daydream the moment he puts his hand to the knife. Snape's there at the table again, leaning close like all the other times. Harry expects the first quiet touch on his shoulder, and his eyes fall shut, just like they do every time. But instead of that gentle hand sliding down his arm, the hand begins to shake him harder and harder, and in the distance he hears, Potter! Potter! Snap out of it, boy! His conscious mind feels as though it's swimming to the surface through molasses. Eventually he makes it, tries to orient himself, but he falls forward into Snape's chest. Snape yanks the knife from his hand and shoves him off. What is wrong with you, Potter? Harry staggers backward and lands on his arse in the flagstones. He's extremely hard, and the landing jars him painfully. He curls in on himself and moans. Are you ill? Potter, speak! I'm okay, Professor, says Harry, clutching a stomach and groaning. You are not a vision of health, Potter, Snape sneers. I ask you again, are you ill? Or perhaps you've taken something, an illegal potion, perhaps? Something manufactured by those benighted Weasley twins? Harry doesn't need to look up to know that Snape's frowning. His robes are grasped at the shoulders, and he's yanked to his feet. And once again, he finds himself pressed into Snape's chest. His erection digs into Snape's thigh. Without much thought, he wraps his arms around Snape's waist and rests his head on Snape's chest. Snape shaking him again and growling, "What is the meaning of this, Potter?" The hands quit shaking him and move to his waist. They wrap around and lift him enough to walk him over to Snape's guest chair. It's the only one in the room besides Snape's desk chair that has a back. Harry slumps down and wraps his arms around his stomach. His erection tenses trousers and robe. Snape circles around his desk and sits. I'm waiting for an explanation, Potter, and you had better make it March. Snape's got a spot of color high on each cheek. When Harry looks at Snape's eyes, they are narrowed with suspicion, and Snape's mouth is pressed into a thin line of distaste. Harry's stomach quakes, but he pushes forward with the truth as he sees it. It's Voldemort. He's sending me a vision. Harry tells him everything, then, starting with the closeness, the gentle, caring looks and touches, all the way through the breathtaking sex and the coming, too, at the end of his orgasm with soiled pants still erect. Dismay sits unfamiliar on Snape's face when Harry finishes his tale. It's a test. He's testing me. Harry thinks he hears Snape mutter. Aloud, Snape says, and you haven't told anyone about them. No, Professor, I can't. I just can't. Tap, tap, tap. Snape's fingernails hit the desk in a quick tattoo until he swings around, grabs flu powder from the dish on the shelf behind him, and calls the headmaster. I shall be late. The detention will run longer than I had anticipated. Don't keep the boy out too late, Severus. He needs his rest as well. From where he sits, Harry hears Snape's teeth grit. Very well, headmaster. I shall see you at 10, says Snape, and wheels around to face Harry. Snape stands by Harry's table. It's got a detailed instruction sheet on it for this afternoon's potion, with pictures at every step. He beckons to Harry, who comes to stand next to him at the table. Snape gestures with one hand for Harry to look down and hastily puts his other hand in his pocket. Harry feels a moment of confusion. He doesn't quite remember what he's doing standing in front of the table, but a map is there and he figures he must have slipped into the daydream again when he feels Snape standing close. Too close. Snape points to the map on the table and says, "We'll be needing it soon." Harry watches Snape roll the parchment up and toss it onto his desk. "Thank you for bringing it to my attention," says Snape, putting a hand on his shoulder. Then Snape's hand slides down Harry's arm, and it's just as it always is each time he has the daydream. Harry gives himself up to it as he always does, lets the caress happen and the little tug that comes after, pulling him into Snape's arms. Snape murmurs something quiet and soothing, and his fingers roam over the edge of Harry's collar to rest warm on the back of his neck. He slides them around, turns Harry's face up to his own, stares deeply, deeply into his eyes, and kisses him. "Your beautiful green eyes," murmurs Snape, and bends in for another kiss. Snape usually compliments Harry at this point in his daydream, but he's never said this before. And now, the slow disrobing, the gentle caresses, and before Harry knows it, he's balanced on the edge of the table, wrapping his legs around a very naked Snape and tilting his head up for another drugging kiss. Snape places his hand flat on Harry's chest and draws his fingers down, down, wraps them gently around Harry's erection and tugs. Stars. Harry sees stars, and he doesn't know why, but this time it feels so much more real than all the other times he slipped into this dream. He doesn't remember his skin shivering so much at Snape's touch. He doesn't remember feeling this cherished, doesn't remember feeling so loved by this man, though by now he's been taken gently by this man dozens of times in his mind. When Snape enters Harry, his hands anchored to Harry's hips, Harry cries out, "Severus!" without even thinking. His legs lock around Severus's waist, and his hips thrust up once again, again, again. Snape meets his thrust, and an hour, a minute, a moment later, Harry's spurting a warm line up his stomach to his chest, and he's calling, "Severus! Severus!" again without thought. Snape responds, his eyes firmly locked to Harry's. "Lily, Lily, Lily!" When Snape pulls himself out of Harry, he shuts his eyes tight. There are tears leaking out from under his lashes when he collapses into the nearest chair. "This is new," thinks Harry. "This is excoriating." And he's still in the daydream. He doesn't know what to do. Usually he's come to by now. So he dresses himself as fast as he can and flees to his dorm. Just as his scar begins to bloom with a fierce pain, he crawls straight into bed. It feels like Voldemort stomping around in his skull, and Harry hopes he finds what he's looking for fast and gets out so he can get some sleep. He wakes in the morning sticky and hopes like hell he never dreams again, either day or night. Snape's not in potions that day, but he returns the next day, white as a sheet, shaking and full of vitriolic nervous energy. Harry's sure he's just back from having been called, and despite the figurative slap in the face from the Snape in his last daydream, he is relieved to find him in one piece and swooping around the room, taking points and sneering. It's been a month now, and Harry hasn't had any more daydreams. Involuntary ones, anyway. He engages in plenty of the other sort. He longs to lean against a strong male chest, with arms wrapped around him, making him feel safe, feel cherished. The strain is getting to him, and he feels like he's cracking under it, like maybe his mind is coming unglued. He could use a bit of comfort these days, but he's no more his mother than he is his father, and if the episode with Snape last month wasn't a ruse to fool Voldemort, and Harry thinks it was, he also thinks the whole event was real, not a daydream, then it's going to be a bugger of a chore to get the only man he would want to give him comfort to see him for himself. Harry's never let the impossibility of a chore stop him from getting it done, though, especially when it's as important as this. He lets his mind wander in potions, imagining all sorts of scenarios for getting Snape into bed. Eventually, he will succeed, though he may have to wait until Voldemort is dead. Harry smiles. Mr. Potter, perhaps you would like to share what you find so amusing tonight in detention. 8 o'clock sharp. My office, says Snape, an uncharacteristic gleam in his eye. Well, maybe he won't have to wait quite that long.